So I kind of mentioned that Brian Lesage, who is the guiding teacher here, he's my beloved. And I've heard that he mentions me in his talks from time to time. And so, yes, I am that Robin. As I often hear people say, "Oh, you're that Robin." So this summer, Brian and I actually taught together for the first time. He was offering a retreat, and it turned out that his teacher, his co-teacher, got sick a couple of days before the retreat. And so then I helped offer some support on that retreat. And actually, there's a few people here on Zoom and in person who were at that retreat. And if you've ever been on retreat, often the last talk that's offered is about how do you bring the retreat into your daily practice. And Brian said something that really stuck with me. And that was, here we are at the end of this retreat, and now the retreat begins. So, as his wife, I had a moment of thinking, is he just being clever? You know, it's kind of a fun thing to say, but what does it actually mean? And so I really started to think about it because I know in his talks, he's very intentional about the language that he uses and how he talks about things. So I really started thinking, what is it in retreat time that can then be part of our moment-to-moment life and our daily practice? And so, whether or not you've ever been on retreat, I want to offer a particular teaching on arriving. That this is something that shows up throughout a retreat arc, the deepness of the arriving, like there's different levels of it that show up, and then how that can actually come into play in your daily life as a practitioner and really support you in your practice. Just to define a thing that I say a lot, I use this term formal practice and moment-to-moment life practice. So I just want to say that when I say formal practice, I'm talking about those times when you have an intention to do a particular practice, either a sitting or walking or lying down, any kind of posture, whatever form that practice takes, but there's an intention. Maybe it's a gathering the attention, gathering the mind practice, or an open awareness or kindness. That's the formal practice. And when I say moment-to-moment life practice, I'm talking about the way that you allow your practice to inform the moments of your life. The way I view it is that formal practice actually informs life practice, that moment-to-moment life practice, and moment-to-moment life practice then folds back into formal practice, that they aren't these two separate things, but they actually coexist and feed each other. And for a lot of people, moment-to-moment life practice is the practice that is most alive for them, because sometimes people can't quite open that little bit of space to do a formal practice. And so whatever your practice looks like, I really want to speak to this quality of arriving. So obviously I talked with Brian about what is the format for these, since he wasn't going to be here. Somebody needed to know what we're doing. And I was pleased but not surprised that he said that you start with this saying hello to each other a little bit, both online and in person. There's something about that that really allows you to know who's here in the room with you. And for some people, that is a really settling thing. So it's knowing, like, oh, these are the other humans that I'm in this Zoom room or I'm in this space with. And then we can get this determination of whether or not how much I can let down into this space once I know who's here with me. There's also, so it, on retreat time, if you don't know this, the first, this can take days for people. The first bit of the retreat is actually arriving in the place. And so it's kind of an orientation to the place. So seeing where you are, hearing where you are, you know, knowing that the water is maybe has a different quality, you're kind of coming into place through your senses. And that can take some time. That it's this both this coming into the place and then like a letting go of what was going before. But some of that is, where am I now? So you might know that deep brain structures, especially like the amygdala, really like to know where I am in terms of what my senses are telling me, so that I can have this sense of, is there a saber-toothed tiger in the room? Is there something that I need to know about? That assessment is different for different bodied people. And so there's not like one answer to, oh, what's here and whether or not it's okay enough. That's individual. And so it's important not for somebody up front to say, oh, you're all okay here, it's fine. It's for your body, for yourself to actually have this assessment. And if you happen to walk in and didn't look behind you where you're sitting, feel free to do that at any time. Sometimes we feel a little awkward about it once we're already seated, but it's important to know where you are. In our formal practice, sometimes we skip this part. We just go and if it's a seating practice, we're like, oh, got to do my sitting practice now. Go and you sit and you miss that thing of, oh, okay, this is actually part of practice. This arriving piece is part of practice. My teacher often talked about it as the first of these four stages of coming into a kind of practice that's an object-related practice with the breath. But the first part of that is this broad awareness of, oh, this body knowing that it's here now. And that starts before you actually sit or begin whatever practice you're doing, because there's the transition. So in retreat time, you think about the transition from like the life that was going on and maybe the busyness of that or not, or being on planes and travel or things that had to be taken care of. There's a transition, and it's important to pay attention to that. And when you are moving into your formal practice in life, there's something really important about noticing that transition. It's not like the light switch of like, oh, okay, now I'm on, now I'm in practice. That transition time is part of the practice. There's something important about these transitions, both coming into the formal practice and then out of. Whether you're doing like a 7-8 minute metta practice, or you're doing a 45 minute concentration or gathering the mind practice, whatever your practice looks like, those transitions are super important and really rich. So I would really encourage you as part of this understanding of arriving to bring that into your practice. I don't know if here in Arizona, there's a place called the Garchin Buddhist Institute, and it's in or outside of Chino Valley. And actually, I went down there for an event years ago, and that's what got me into practice, was a teaching by Garchin Rinpoche. And I then watched a documentary on his life. And he talked about when he was young, his father said, here's a practice for you. Pick a place, however far in front of you when you're walking, or just to name this here, like if you're in a chair and rolling, or if you're moving in some other way, then pick a place. And then can you be present from where you are to that place? And it wasn't about arriving at that place. It was about arriving at each step along the way. Can you be here? Can you stay arrived in a way? And that's not just with that kind of movement. It's also can you you know, there's the idea that, oh, the water wants to get in the mouth here, and that's it arriving. But can this whole process be part of what's being arrived at? Can I arrive at the contact with the hand, and then the movement, and then the actual act of drinking? I am kind of curious about this, and you can raise your hand or not raise your hand. This is completely fine. But I get curious about how many people have gone into a meditation space that's completely quiet, and there's the invitation is to close your eyes in order to arrive. Like, I know I've been in spaces like that, and I'm going to say that for some people, that is the way that they arrive. That's the way their system arrives. There's been so much sensory input. So to have a place where you can decrease some of the sensory input and be able to settle a little bit can be really helpful. And for other people, that's not the case. Like knowing and letting that deep brain know where you are can be part of that arriving. And sometimes we're trained to arrive by closing our eyes. And if that's the case, then I would encourage you to get curious about that. Like, even when you begin formal practice, to maybe let the eyes and ears be open, let the senses be open as part of knowing how this body knows it's in this moment. So in the, some of you might be familiar with the Satipatthana Sutta, which is, my understanding is that actually it's a collection of teachings, that it's taught as a teaching that the Buddha offered, but it's my understanding is that it's actually this collection of all the different things that he talked about in terms of sati, which is often translated as mindfulness. So it's how to establish mindfulness. And that it's this, it's almost like this nesting of arriving. So the first arriving is body, place, root of a tree, forest, empty hut, where you're arriving to. And then there's like these nestings of arriving. And that the whole first quarter of that is this arriving into how you move. So there's arriving into formal practice, but then it also talks about like the arriving into knowing when you're moving forward or when you're moving back, knowing when you're looking ahead or looking to the side, or when your arm is extended or retracted. It's all these ways of knowing posture that's another way that we arrive into the moment, is to know how we're moving, what we're eating, how we're tasting. It's all of those kind of levels. And that in our daily life, we can have the intention to arrive. And if that's not your word, you can use a different word, to arrive into every moment, as this particular teaching talks about. So it names all the postures and it names those particular things. Now, the Buddha named these five senses that we know, the tasting, smelling, seeing, hearing, and then sensation, and then also the sense of the mind. And I don't know, this is kind of what we're taught. There's these five senses, but we have so many more senses than these five senses. So part of that can be relationship with gravity. And so to open ourselves up to a relationship with space, there's so many ways that our system knows that we've arrived in this moment, that we're actually here. And to really let yourself use those to give you that kind of information. So as a retreat kind of goes along, there's this sense of arriving in place, and then there's these teachings each night. So they're usually about 45 minutes each day. There's some kind of Dharma teaching. And then these Dharma teachings are on how to arrive more, like how to now arrive into knowing like the state of the mind. Like, oh, is there constriction or expansion? Is there craving or pushing away? That's part of like a deeper next level of arriving. I think of it as like these, I think it's Matryoshka dolls, the Russian dolls that are stacked. And I learned the interesting thing is that I'd always just thought of them as these like family stacked dolls. But one understanding of them is that, so here's this matriarchy and that like the little one is the seed. And then here's all these nestings of like generations or family. And I think about this as like, if you think about arriving as like a nesting of different arrivings, then the seed, the beginning can either be this orientation to place, or the big doll can be the orientation to place, like that you can go in and out in either way. And that another one of those dolls might be starting to have these understandings of state of mind. Or then Vedana, like, oh, right. And then what's also showing up, what's opening up is that pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Like the teachings start to open up. But you can't do that if you haven't arrived. And so then this is like a deeper level of arriving. So during retreat time, you're getting these teachings throughout the retreat. But I'm curious if that is brought into people's home practice. This idea of tasting the Dharma every day in some way, having some kind of teaching that you're kind of savoring throughout the day. So I went down to a place where I've done a lot of my study, which is outside of Tucson, Arizona. A lot of my practice is there. And there's a little community there now. And in the morning, they read from, there's these set of daily reflections from Abhayagiri, and it's called Beginning Our Day. So they would read one of those in the morning, and then in the evening, they'd come back together and talk about how it had been alive for them in their day. So one thing that we can do is to bring the teachings into our moment-to-moment life by intentionally bringing some teaching. And it doesn't have to be something big. So I should have asked. We have a whole stack of these cards on our shared altar at home. I don't know where they came from, but these big ones showed up fairly recently. I never asked Brian where they came from, but they'll say things like, all activities should be done with one intention. Boy, that's something that could be hung out with all day. And on the back, this one has a commentary, which is great. Whatever you are doing, take the attitude of wanting it directly or indirectly to benefit others. Take the attitude of wanting it to increase your experience of kinship with your fellow beings. Just that. Like, imagine like reading this in the morning, and that even if you don't necessarily recall it, you might recall the idea of it. And that brings the teachings into your daily life. We have other ones that have a whole a kind of a different feel. This one says, recognize the natural face of whatever thought takes place. And that's one that doesn't have an immediate, like, what does that mean? You know? So you get to kind of like play with that opening and get curious about it. Like little things that you can chew on during the day. Years ago, Robert Bly, who's a poet, came to NAU. And so I went to hear him talk. And then afterwards, I went up to chat with him. And I remember him saying, oh, yeah, I just recommend that you know, you read a Hafiz poem every day, you know, and who's a Sufi poet. And I was already doing that. So I said, oh, yeah, I do that. And he was surprised, I think, that someone was already doing that. And And so sometimes I have, a few different poetry books. This was Love Poems from God, 12 Sacred Voices from the East and West. And so sometimes like poetry is what sinks in. And then that's like something to inform the day, that we don't have to wait necessarily for these weekends or for these Monday nights. Although it might be that you hear a talk on a Monday night, and then that is the fodder for your practice throughout the week. That somehow bringing some kind of reflective practice into your life. And you might realize that reading one of these things, it could take 30 seconds. It's not like you have to, I gotta, really put in a big chunk of time. You just have to have the intention for it. The intention to open up new layers of arriving into your life. There's a sutta called the Bhadakarata Sutta. And I'm just going to read one piece of this sutta, because this for me is a sutta that that I can chew on for a really long time. Because if you read there's a little poetry in it, and then there's like whole investigations of what it means in the suttas. And so you might find something like that there's a teaching. You can go through the suttas and just read some little bit, and then that online or somewhere there's a bunch of things that are going to teach you about that. But before you do that, just let it resonate with your own system. See what shows up for you. So a little bit of that poetry part is, let not a person revive the past or on the future build their hopes. For the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let them see each presently arisen state. Let them know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. With insight, let them see each presently arisen state, to know it and be sure of it. I think it is wonderful that we have access to so many different teachings through the internet and through different things. And there's a lot of teaching in here, in your own system, that you can invite that to show up, for that to arrive. And then you can read some other things or check out some other things at times, but let your own system, what it's been developing, really give you some of that daily insight. Again, there has to be an intention for it. So at the end of retreat, when there's this invitation to let your next retreat start right now, one of the most important things is setting the intention for that to happen, setting the intention for, how do I arrive into each moment? And it's a daily thing, a daily intention setting. So I want to end with a very short poem by Ryokan. And I would tell you that Ryokan was I'm going to pause because here in Flagstaff there's a helicopter going over. Ryokan was a wise Japanese Buddhist. But when I read about him, it said he didn't like to be called a poet or a teacher. So I'm just going to share that his name was Ryokan, this Japanese Buddhist. And he said this: there's a bamboo grove in front of my hut. Every day I see it 1,000 times, yet never tire of it. There's a bamboo grove in front of my hut. Every day I see it 1,000 times, yet never tire of it. It is as if each time he arrived anew to that bamboo forest. And we, you know, there's lots of reasons, like the way our brain structure is and a lot of things, that we lose that sense of arriving each moment. It becomes like our brain is a prediction machine. And so we don't always catch moments. So to be able to arrive at the bamboo grove, whatever that is, each time, and not get tired of it, to not get tired of each moment, to arrive somehow anew, and to also bring that into your formal practice, that arriving anew. Whatever is there. So just kind of in closing, the invitation is to cultivate this sense of arriving in all these nested kind of ways, like beginning with like the physically arriving into any and every moment of your life as much as you can. And then the arriving into like this body, like the posture or the movement, those kind of things, that's part of an arriving as well. And then this arriving of like the teachings, the Dharma, the wisdom that can show up from your own system and from cultivating this reflective practice each day. But how that helps you arrive more and more deeply. Okay, I find I'm going to say one more thing, which is there was a set of books by, it was the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis. I don't know if you all read that, but the last one was The Last Battle. And in it, people, well, basically, when they died, they would go through this archway that was looked like it was a shed, like an old barn shed. And yet, when the beings, because they weren't all human beings, would go through it, it would be opened into a whole nother world. And then the further in they went, the bigger it got. And then the further in they went, the more it got. So it wasn't like the peeling of an onion and everything gets smaller. It was almost like the peeling of the onion and everything got infinitely larger. So when you pass through the gateway into arriving into this moment, to know that this moment can continue to expand and expand and expand. So thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.